This is, I think, technically the third meeting of the Seabed Advisory Task Force, the second meeting that I've been involved with. My name's Charlie Peterson, and I'll be the facilitator through the process here today. And would like to welcome you, and in front of you is the, excuse me, the agenda on the bright yellow, or I think the official term for this is canary paper. We'll do introductions here in just a few moments to see who's at the meeting. We'll do a little bit of backgrounding as to why we are here, both conceptually, and I'll go through some of the process pieces. Then we'll focus the bulk of the meeting on the issues. If you remember the last meeting in October, we talked about what we wanted to accomplish. And the second step of that is, based on what we identified, what are the issues that are standing in our way? That'll be the discussion for today's meeting. And then we'll end it by looking at trying to schedule a follow-up meeting. And we may, don't worry, it's not really difficult, but we may give you a little bit of homework, at least something to think about between this meeting and the next meeting. Anything else to add to the agenda? Okay. I've seen issues discussions go very quickly. I've seen them go or be very lengthy, go a long period of time. So I'm not exact. We'll be out of here definitely by 12. I'll hint. I won't guarantee, but I'll hint that maybe we can get out a little bit early. I know we've got some people that are trying to get out of here for Thanksgiving break. Anything else for the agenda? Okay, let's see who's here. Let's just simply go around the group. Name, what you do, and where. And who you are representing. We'll go around the table first as far as members of the task force. Then we'll branch out into the audience. Okay, great. And it's also, Jenny just said that we're also sending around a sign-in sheet so we can get a formal list of who's here. So by, the break, partway through the meeting this morning, if you haven't gotten the sign-up sheet, come get a hold of me or Jenny, and we'll get it to you and get your name officially entered in here. Who wants to start with introductions? Okay, we're on a roll this morning. I'll choose. Uh-oh. I'll choose.
It's going to be bad.
Okay, let's go here and let's go counterclockwise around the table. Go ahead.
I'm Dwayne Nineman. I'm here as a renewable energy consultant from Ortonville, and I'm representing Clean Up the River Environment in Montevideo.
Great, thank you.
Ryan Wolf Wind Development from southwestern Minnesota, and I'm representing the community wind developers.
Okay.
My view on them anyway.
Thanks.
Todd Volnowski, Business Development
with
John Deere.
Okay.
Lisa Daniels, Executive Director of Windstry. Windstry works to promote locally owned energy projects.
Okay, thank you.
Come up. Mike Franklin, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
Jeff Peters, Director of Marketing and Development, Missouri River Energy Services.
Larry Johnston, Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency.
Kurt Bierplin, representing Outland Renewable Energy, and we do community wind projects.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Mike Bull. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Renewable Energy at the Minnesota Department of Commerce.
Paul Johnson with Minnesota Power, and I'm responsible for developing and implementing our renewable plan.
Lee Sundberg with the Minnesota Rural Electric Association.
I'm Margaret Schreiner here on behalf of Metro County's Energy Task Force.
John Fuller, I work for the Senate Energy Committee.
Jenny Myers, I work for the Senate Energy Committee, Senator Pretner Solon, and the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force.
Andy Palmer, I work for the House of Representatives Energy Committee, Representative Hilty and the LEETF.
Bobby Liff with House Research.
Paul Blackburn, Community-Based Energy Development Initiative. And I'm sitting in for Dan Jewell, can't be here today.
Mike Mashad, I'm a consultant with Matrix Energy Solutions, and I do consulting on technical and policy issues related to seabed.
George Crocker, Executive Director, North American Water Office. Our job is to help the new energy paradigm see the light of day before it gets killed.
Thank you.
Andrew Falk, I'm an independent developer from West Central Minnesota, representing myself, and I work on behalf of Seabed Projects.
Okay, thank you.
Erin Hyde, I do resource planning for Xcel Energy.
Okay, great. We started on this side. So for the audience, let's go on this side of the room. Just name and what you're doing where, and there's a post in the way, so I might be dancing around a little bit. Go ahead.
Your resource planning with Great River Energy.
Okay.
Sarah Els with Alliant Energy.
Okay, keep doing, going down the back row.
Elizabeth Emerson with Black Ridge Gravel down
here.
Okay.
Okay, come up to the...
Rebecca Pelcher, Cleveland. I'm with the Green Street.
Great. Let's go through the back row in the back of the room here.
Dudley Hogestock, Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Thank you.
Roland, Xcel Energy.
Okay.
Rick Evans, Xcel Energy.
Can't see behind the post. Is there anybody? Yes, there is.
Jim Tenheim, Minnesota Farmers Union.
Cool. Great.
Doc Ken Valley, let's win things.
Okay.
Steve Garvey, Minnesota Power.
Earl Hart, Public
Great. We're doing name and what you doing, Barb?
I'm Allison Hartle. I work for Lockheed Martin now on, and I represent John Deere.
Okay. We'll get the post. Come up here in a second. Go ahead.
It's a Trudeau.
Yeah.
Okay. And then let's go back right here.
Joe Marvel, Republican House Research.
Isn't he right? Ed Warner, Senate Republican Research.
Okay. One's for Bakker, Great River Energy. I'm on the task force, but for punishment, I'm sitting here.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Andrew Boone, Senate Majority Research.
Okay.
Marty Beer, I work for Senator Prentice.
Okay. Anybody, who else did we miss or that just came in that didn't get introductions? Yes, go ahead.
Mike Ahern, and I'm kind of a utility group.
Okay, sounds good. Anybody else we missed? Okay, let's take a little bit of look in background and why we're here. Do we have?
We don't have approval yet from Representative Hill to send out the memo.
Okay, we'll go into the background here probably after the break or a little bit before the break. We're trying to get a signature and approval on some language. What I want to talk about is sort of a follow-up as to what we did the last time and remind you of a couple of things that we talked about the last time. First thing, just want to remind you, requested four things of you the last time. Those are always my bottom line for every group that I work with, every meeting that I do. Your minds for creativity, because that's where the heavy lifting is. Your voices to share those ideas. Your ears to listen to the other people's ideas, thoughts, and comments so that creativity can happen, all in an atmosphere of respect. Very basic, but hopefully we can abide by those. At the last meeting, you take out the white sheet of paper, that should be in front of you, or there's copies on the back, the proverbial grid. We asked the task force, what do you want to accomplish with CBAT? What do you want done? And we came up with basically seven things or seven areas. First of all, improved economic benefits to Minnesota. Let me put these together. And then you had two that fit into local economic impact. First one was range of local economic impact, local ownership to local control. Second one is range of local economic impact, encourage local economic benefits. The other thing you wanted to accomplish, your goal, is the ratepayers don't pay too much. Want a clear definition of eligibility and a pathway to viable projects. Inside that, there need to be standards, clarity, and quickness, speed of this. This one we never quite finalized, so we ended up putting two words in, was either incentives or allowance for diversity of projects and benefits to the communities. And then the last one across the top there are markets for viable seabed. And those of you that were at the process, remember it. We asked you for your individual ideas, individual responses to those questions. Those are the bullet points that are underneath. We combine those ideas into themes, and these headings are the themes for that. And to give you a little peek under the hood as to where we're going today and sort of for the overall process, basically I'm using what I'll call a fairly standard strategic planning model to work through the issues, work through this whole seabed piece. The first piece is always basically, where do you want to go? What do you want to accomplish? That's what we've identified here. If you identify it in consultant or planning speak, it's what's your vision? What do you want out there? What do you want to reach for? The second step, where we're at today, are what are those issues, what are those barriers that are standing in your way? What are those things that you need to address so this vision can become a reality? And again, that's our focus for today. The next meeting, again, in consultant speak, are going to be strategies. Based on where you want to go, based on what you've identified as the issues, what can we start to do from a sort of a broad conceptual standpoint to address these issues to make this become a reality? Sort of built one upon each other. And then the final step in this become the specific actions to fit into the strategies that address the issues that get you to your vision. Again, it's a sort of inverted pyramid as you look at it. The vision are your broadest concepts, your issues boil it down a little farther, your strategies boil it down a little farther, and then down to your specific actions. A number of people have, either currently or in the future, is, you know, you identify a collection of things on your vision, you identify a collection of things with your issues, et cetera, et cetera. Well, why can't you pick these off one at a time? Why go at this at sort of a group process piece like this? Part of the group process value is just simply so we can build this together so everybody can hear where various people are coming from, so we can, for lack of a better term, create sort of a construction team. So we're sort of building it together. So we're all here, we all know what's going on, we all can build a level of trust as we build this piece together. The other is, very seldom do any of these issues ever stand alone. There's always a level of integration with them. Whether you're looking at a huge issue, which this has potential to be, or whether you're just trying to deal with something in everyday life. And the best example to sort of play through this is going back to sort of that everyday life experience, in that this last fall, our family decided to take a vacation. Well, and the first question on a vacation is, where do you want to go? So we identified a collection of things. Hold on, I got to look at my cheat sheet here. We wanted to go overseas because we'd done some traveling locally. We wanted the vacation to be a little bit different. We wanted to have a mix of countryside and city. We also wanted to have the vacation be fairly easy because of a couple of other things. Our vision very quickly became we were going to go to England. Once that was identified, then we started looking at, okay, what are the issues? What are the things that we got to think about if we're going to do this? The biggest one was the aspect of money. and how what is needed to get that happen. The other big one was time. We don't have a whole lot of time. We're busy working people. The other big one we have two kids, ages 7 and ages 10. The other piece was, my favorite one, I'm no longer 20 and doing backpacking via Brit Rail and staying in hostels. My back can't take it anymore. So I throw that out as age, maybe more as a comfort thing. But this actually became a biggie. The other one that we identified, if I can spell, was getting around, the whole issue of transportation. These were the issues that we identified with that. With our strategies, we didn't pick off the money one, then the time one, then the kids one. Actually, the kids one became the huge driver. This issue became the thing that we started, you know, looking around with everything else. We wanted to do things that would be fun for them. If you have kids that are that age, you know that you can't do the pounding of seeing, you know, 7 art galleries, 2 museums, and, you know, 2 plays in a day. You got to pick off and do one thing at a time and something that they enjoy doing. Also, the whole accommodations aspect. It played into the money, played into the time, played into the kids, and became a huge transportation piece. So, and actually, accommodations and our children became the big drivers from a strategy standpoint. And this is where we figured out where we wanted to go based off of money. It was cheap. We found cheap locations that were fairly centrally located, and then literally gave the kids a tour book that had pictures in them, so the kids could pull out the pictures. They did. We read the narrative. Kids don't. The kids went with the pictures. Again, all of these pieces, they don't knock off one of these. They knock off a collective of these. So that's why we're doing this in sort of a broad general process like this. That's why we're doing this from the concept of taking your individual concepts and then building it into a broader theme and response across the board. And then once we got down to sort of the broad concepts here, then my wife and I sort of knocked off, you know, I took accommodations. I took what plays we were going to go see. She did the rental car. We actually, she did also the airline reservations and everything along those lines. Once we got down, once we had these identified, we could sort of break these up now into chunks to build the specific actions. And giving you a little peek under the hood, hopefully when we get done with our strategies, which will be the meeting after this, we can break up into some small groups, get these actions identified, and I got news for you, I don't make a decision with my wife without my wife's okay, and she usually doesn't make a decision without my okay. So we bring back our information that we found and then make that decision together. Same concept here. We can break these up into small groups, but we will collectively, once we have that information, we will collectively make those decisions together. So we've got this meeting, another broad meeting, and we'll probably break up to a series of meetings to work on some of these specific actions, and then maybe one or two meetings to bring these back together to the full group for the group's comments and or blessing. Any comments or questions or concerns about sort of the broad plan? Does it make sense? Yes? No? Question? Yes, thank you.
Let me try an example to see if what I might understand is a vision or a strategy. Take the governor's announcement a year or more ago about 800 megawatts of seabed. We had a law, we have a law, and from that he decided to push for 800 megawatts. Is that a vision, or is that a strategy to reach a vision? You know, is that so? You know, I don't know if there's a yes or no, right or wrong answer to that.
Sure.
It just may help clarify what direction
this
is looking at.
And again, these steps need to be built in the context of what's there from statute, rules, the pieces that are there, sort of creating what I call the box that you end up making the decisions in, with the opportunity that that box can be changed. So there is, I've worked in places where the box can't be changed. So in some ways, there's some value in that flexibility of, gosh, if this group thinks and this group can come to some level of an agreement that based on what we've built here, we can take this back and change statute, change a rule, potentially even get some comments and voices to the governor's office, maybe even change the executive direction on it. This group has the value in the ability to do that. Go ahead.
Yes or no?
Part of what led me to that question was I was trying to break down whether vision is real or unreal. I've often heard that when a organization looks at a vision, it should be a high ideal that is probably unachievable. So it's way up there.
Sure.
On the other hand, I've heard visions are something that you can grab onto and measure eventually.
Vision.
Philosophy versus...
Visions are developed to lead an organization. Visions are developed to lead this group in a direction. Are they attainable or not? Depends on the group, depends on the environment, depends on the issue. I mean, there is a huge, it depends. And it may not be, I think visions need to be practical, in all honesty. I think they need to push. But I think they need to be practical. Because if you reach with no ability to obtain, I don't think there's any value in that. You'll do that once. May do it twice. But after a while, you're going to stop reaching. So I think there needs to be a level of practicality inside that. Question? Okay.
There's a foundation here that I think we need to examine. Not on that list of issues that you had to address on your trip was the one of attitude. I've raised kids in a variety of venues for a while, and I know that kids' attitudes make a big difference.
Won't argue there.
And we have an attitude problem here. We're talking all around this table about how wonderful seabed is. We have massive institutional power around this table to make seabed work. So why is it that now 2 years into this, it's more difficult rather than easier to overcome the barriers that we've identified a long time ago? There's nothing new on that chart.
Okay.
Right? Nothing new. So my point is that if we're going to get somewhere serious, we're going to have an attitude adjustment, it seems to me, in order to really understand how we can use the institutional, the private and the public barriers or institutions to really start to focus on how to overcome that. Now, we have and have had ideas on how to do that. But as it becomes harder, not easier, to get seabed projects, as we bring quality projects forward, there's an issue here.
Okay. And going back to the attitude piece, it's implied in those issues in using the image book for the kids. Because the best thing to deal with attitude is involvement and trust. And when you hand that book to those kids and they choose a place and you say, we're going to go there, A, you better go there. and B, they're excited when they go. The two places that I can think of off of this trip that had my kids buzzed were the two things that they ended up choosing. So I think it's implied there. That's why we're sitting around the table and doing this process. That's why I fall back on this process as a way to get something down here, is to try and raise those issues, work collectively to hopefully address the attitude. There are issues, and you may be talking things that are deeper than some of the stuff that's here, and I'm not disagreeing, but this is a way, just simply in the process, to try and address some of those. Maybe it's only, taking a nick off the shoulder, but hopefully it'll go a little deeper inside. Yes?
On the vision part from last meeting?
Yes.
The way you presented it today, it kind of implies that we have a commonality of a vision, and it's all laid out here in this piece of paper. But, I recall last meeting that there was a comment made that some of these items on this chart are competing with each other. And there's trade-offs, and you lose something if you emphasize the other thing. And so I just wanted to clarify that we're not really starting from a unified common vision really here.
But we've identified a collection of pieces that we want to go. And even in this, there are trade-offs. There are balances that you need to make as you work down through the process. Yeah. I grew up in the theater, and gosh, I got a chance to go see London Theater. We spent 3 days in London, and if you ever have tried to do London in 3 days, it's impossible. We got to one show that was my kid's choice. But following up from that look on my kid's face, my children's face, when they saw some of the stuff that happened in that show, completely changed my opinion on it. So again, yes, there may be some things here that are competing. There may be some things that we need to work the balance on. But we need to work on that collectively. There are some things that's the hand and glove fit. In all honesty, those are probably the easy ones. It's those where we've got some level of conflict that we need to work out and work through. I'm giving you a peek under the hood. But I'm also challenging you a little bit with these small groups. Because at times, you got to put some trust in those small groups to be able to come up with some responses. And it's going to be probably down in this area where you're going to be trying to address some of those conflicts. We're working down through the process here. In all honesty, this was the easy step. We've got some work in heavy lifting. There were a couple hands over here. John, and then over here. Did you have one, John?
Yeah, just to sort of follow up on George, the Electric Energy Task Force has met a couple of times, and our statutory assignment for this group is pretty narrow in a sense. From the Senate came that we wanted to figure out what local projects delivered the same sort of benefits. But I think this meeting has been valuable for me, these meetings and that. The primary thing we got to do is get this stuff built. And we're part of that issue as well. You have to figure out a way that there's a lot of issues out there that have nothing to do whether you're seabed or not. There's transmission, all that. And so Charlie had said he didn't want side discussion, so I thought there have been some side thinking. We want to be able to develop a system so the stuff can get built. And obviously we have a congested process for building them. A lot of regulatory issues, legislature. It'd be nice to develop some technique, at least from the state perspective. The state role would be clear to people where how they can change, because we have an 18-year project out there, and obviously the underlying facts are going to change, so you need some nimbleness built into that process. So I would encourage you to think about that overall overarching process under which umbrella which you exist as CBED, or you want to do CBED, because that overarching process is not as nimble as it should be for anybody's purposes. Okay, so I think that's important to keep in mind. We should think the big picture. And we've been told by Claire Moeller at one of the task force meetings that in the short term, there could be real difficulties by any number of issues. And so we should be aware of that. We should think through those issues as well, I think, is how we can get this stuff built, and then whatever goes to different sorts of projects will happen. But if it doesn't get built, nobody will get any. So we're trying to figure out ways to clear up that process. And then I think we need a discussion on, and like I said, we were told not to have side discussions, so I'll bring it to the group, as to what are the concerns about seabed model, you know, from the utilities perspective, because I've heard, you know, there might be some. We should get on the table, you know, if there are some issues, is it control or maintenance or whatever it is, or how they're involved in those projects, so we can address those issues. Because I think there is an understanding that we want to have local projects. So if there are some concerns about just the nature of those projects, we should put those on the table as well. So I mean, I don't think it's an attitude problem, but I mean, there are larger issues over which we don't have control, and some of which we do, which will drive whether the projects are built at all. So I think we are going to have those sorts of discussions, because it's our judgment that we do not have a process in place that allows utilities and developers to have a clear picture of what's going to happen out there and when it's going to happen. And some of those we don't control, but to the extent we do, we should make that more transparent so that the discussions can be at the same level and understanding of what's going to happen in the future. And what Claire told us and what we're thinking is that, I mean, there's a lot of projects that congest the system that are never going to be built. There's just a lot of proposals out there, and there's a lot of expenditures. Concerning projects aren't going to get built. So if there's a method to sort of winnow out or make it clear, you know, what's going to be built where, you can compete with that rather than having a whole bunch of projects coming in. That seems to be a helpful way to look at it. So it's like maybe the project design will be top down. You know, the experts will say, here's where we want these wind projects, they'll do. And then maybe the thought is coming locally up more will be, what are the projects that have local benefit? You know, that's sort of a rough picture. That's the thinking that's going on the side, just to let you know, so you understand the context of what our concerns are.
Okay, gentlemen here, and we'll come. There was one hand, or maybe two there. Let's go here.
Paul Johnson with Minnesota Power. And just looking at the process, it just seems like there needs to be a feedback loop as you work down that.
Okay.
From what I heard you say, and from what other people have said here, is as you work down to higher levels of detail and specificity, and you get into the diversity, I think diversity was used quite a few times in your direction thing here. There are things that fit for some projects, some areas of the state that don't fit for other parts of the state. And sure. So as you broaden it into some of the more specifics, as you go down that process, there's feedback
from whom?
That goes up. Excuse me?
From whom? Feedback from whom?
Okay, for instance, you know, getting good wind data applies to all wind projects, and you need to have so much time to get good wind data, okay? That applies to whether it's agricultural seabed project or a seabed project up on the range, whether there's farmers that are the local owners, or if there's local municipalities that are a part of the ownership structure, or if there's a major role of the utility in the ownership structure. There are different issues, different. So you may add some more modifiers or clarification to this roadmap. I call the vision the roadmap. The issues are kind of the things you're going to deal with to get to that destination. The strategy is how to overcome them, and then the actions is actually what you do.
Yep. Bingo.
So
yeah.
I mean,
roadmap. And yes.
So unless you have some kind of feedback that kind of works you through that as you walk through this 18-year journey here.
And the one issue that goes
a long run.
Yeah, that goes back to what was said here is the tension with the feedback is just simply our timing. So I think I have no problem with putting a feedback piece in with this. We need to be a little cautious of that, and you know, the timing that we need to have something in place so we can take advantage of this. So feedback makes a ton of sense. Again, it just needs to fit into our timing piece here. Yes.
Well, I really appreciate both of the comments, and John, you're right. You know, there are those things that are not within the control of people in this room, but there's a whole lot of gray area as to what is possible within things that we're accustomed to thinking we don't have control over, and it's attitude that allows us to move towards those things that we could do if we decided we wanted to. And my job is to help us understand how to push that level so that where there is a choice of how authority, whether it's private or public, in this room, to change the ground rules to make it easier for community capital to form, to do seabed, that's our job. And we have some really, really good ideas, and we have for a long time, and we've had resistance to it for doing it. One of them's right here, how to deal with interconnection at the state authority level. We get grousing when we talk about this solution, even though it's within the rubric of FERC and MISO. So it's that attitude that I want us to adjust.
Couple more comments, and then we need to move on. Anything else? Okay. What? Yes. Comment here. Oh, let me. Well, go ahead. Then I'll.
That's so helpful. Went down the wire. I'm just part of the group, but not around the table. I think it's very important to acknowledge what John said. There are other things that have to be considered that we may or may not have control over that are going to impact whether the projects get done or not. Transmission, for example. Mm-hmm. There are lots of other factors that impact projects. And I think we have to acknowledge that, let's just say we all agree exactly what we want to do with seabed. There may be other factors that are out of our control that don't allow projects to get done. That could be for any kind of a project. So I just, not that we... use that as an excuse, but I think it would be unwise of us to not acknowledge those other factors. Even if we just park them on a list beside what we're trying to achieve and say, here are the other things that impact getting projects done.
Okay, John. Yeah, I just want to make clear, my motivation is to invite people to deal with those things. That to get seabed, you may have to address some other issues. It wasn't the other way around that these other issues would block it, but if they do, we should, to an extent, we have the ability address these larger issues, because otherwise there won't be any projects, so fewer projects.
That's even better.
Okay, you get the final say.
Well, I was just going to follow up with a comment about, appreciate, John, what you said about we need to get some state process formed, because if I remember actually in this legislation that we passed last year, working on it very closely with the respective parties here, that the idea of doing state interconnection authority was very controversial. So if it's not as controversial now, we actually can work on it. That's definitely a step in the right direction. So I hope people do want to embrace that, and we can figure out what this gray area is, and we can figure out processes that we can all work with. But just the fact that we're having a discussion that it's something we can talk about now is definitely a step in the right direction.
Thank you. Couple of things. I know this gentleman over here and the woman who just spoke are formal members of the task force. For my benefit, if for nothing else, if you guys could move to the table, there's a couple of seats here, we will make room for you. If there's members of the task force that are sitting in the audience, please come to the table, because the discussion today needs to focus around you folks. Which goes into my second piece, is that the focus for the discussion is going to be with the task force members. I don't have problems with quote-unquote members of the audience making comment and chiming in. What I will do from a process standpoint, though, is if a hand goes up or a comment comes from someone around the table, I will go to them first. And it will be, if there's a hand goes up in the audience, I'll hold on that person until the conversation has either died down or we've got a lull in the conversation, and then can go to the audience. Just simply for fairness on it, and I think it was set up that the discussion is to happen amongst the task force members. One other piece. Let me just give this to you as a cautionary piece. And I think we're already starting to see a little bit of it. In this planning process, the issues are always the low ebb. Because that's where you pull out all the dirty laundry, it's where you pull out all of the issues, all of the problems. In all these meetings, this is going to be the low ebb. Just understand that and recognize the next meeting is where we get to dig through all of that and try and solve the problem. And that's going to be one of,
and it's going to be sort of the quote-unquote emotional homework issue, is not to come out of here wringing your hands saying, oh, ain't this awful, is to come out of it saying, okay, we got to do some things. Just in all these processes in a whole planning piece, this is the piece that you need to sort of manage, for lack of a better term, from an emotional standpoint. Let's move on in the agenda. How are we doing time-wise? Okay, great. If you look at item 4, that's the question that I want to focus on for the rest of the morning. So take a couple of minutes. We did the last time. Use the blank sheet at the back of your agenda and jot down how you would respond to that question. Based off of the vision, based off of the things that we identified that we wanted CBED to accomplish, what do you see as the issues or barriers standing in the way to make this a reality? Let's take about 5 minutes. Use whatever blank sheet of paper you've got. Use the back of the agenda. And how would you specifically respond to that question? And I'm going to go around the group and then ask for a comment from everybody. Yes.
Are you looking for ideas of things that are within our jurisdiction, or are you thinking of dividing out and creating that parking lot that was suggested before, issues that we might not be able to tackle here?
At this point in time, let's go with the broad brush. And as those things that are sort of outside our scope come up, we may sort of start pulling those out and identifying them. I would start with the broad brush first. Yes.
And are you primarily interested in identifying the problem or barrier, or are we supposed to come up with ways to get around them? Or?
We're looking at just simply identifying the problem. We'll come up with ways to get around them here. So we're, again, this is the low ebb. This is the this is the time to say, oh gosh, there's all these problems with this. Throw these problems, now's the time to throw those problems out. Let's identify them. Let's see what they are. So ultimately, we can start addressing them. We can start picking them off. Okay. Thank you.
if you've got a list down, we got a couple more minutes. If you've got a list down, why don't you go back and star the two issues that you've identified that you think are the most critical? Anybody need more time? Okay. We'd like to go around the group. I'll probably do the who wants to start first and then go counterclockwise or clockwise, whatever that way. But I'd like to have you give, first of all, just one issue. Go around the group once, get one issue from everybody. Then we will open it up to any additional issues that have not been identified. One thing I just want you to help me with is that I'm going to try and write down your comments up here. I'm going to try and use your words, but I can't write as fast as you guys talk. I've learned that after doing 17 years and having really bad handwriting with it. So try and look and see what I'm writing down, and if I don't get the concept right, make me get it right, because this is going to be our documentation from this. Somebody over here taking notes on a computer, so maybe we can work together on some of the terms, but this is going to be the front-end shot for the documentation with this. Who wants to start? Okay, you started the last time, so we'll pass. Let's go this way, and let's go counterclockwise. One issue.
The limitation or difficulty in securing financing.
Explain that. What do you mean? Help me with that. In financing, in what way?
Well, from what sources? Going out and attracting sufficient funds for a seabed developer and seabed owners to secure the funding necessary to finance the project, and more importantly, to have the timing of that financing fit such they can make and support the turbine purchase commitment without losing the turbines, which is 80% of the project.
You use terms there. Yeah, have the timing fit for the purchase and...
Well, here you can work over 18 months trying to get all these people to try to line up for financing, and you hit two windows of 1 month each during that 18-month period where the turbine supplier says, great, here's the offer. Okay. I need to know in 30 days. If you don't have the money, I'm sorry, but we're moving on. So you can work very diligently at getting financing, but the turbine supplier window for their decision to sell to you or to someone else is 30 to 60 days.
Okay. Yes, one issue.
The political reality of no new taxes. That shuts off any avenue of state assistance. Or seems to, as was done in earlier years when the state provided a cent and a half kilowatt hour incentive.
Okay, so it's the political reality of not identifying a pool of money that's not currently there, which would be after generating from taxes, et cetera.
For accomplishing what might be the goal or is the goal of local wind development.
Yes, go ahead.
I'll make it easy. Economic development jealousy.
You said this was going to be easy.
It's only three words.
Help me with this one.
Well, I think one of the things that I've been hearing is as one individual is successful in attracting a project or a part of a project, neighbors are quite jealous of what's happening in one corner of the world. And we're starting now to deal with issues of who has wind rights and who should be paid and how many contracts do we need to negotiate. And as you go down that path, you add considerable cost and you add considerable time. And I think that that's going to get to be a bigger issue rather than a smaller issue.
What does the jealousy stem from?
Someone getting economic benefit. It's always all about the money.
So it's actually who gets follow the money aspect. But and is it the economic development jealousy? Don't worry, I have spell check. Between who? Is it between all the players? Is it localized? I'll be direct back. Is it with local units of government? Is it bigger and broader than that?
The two situations that I'm aware of, it's very local.
Okay.
It's very local. It's neighbors. Matter of fact, it's relatives. Not my relatives, but.
Okay. I won't go as far as saying it's obviously locally focused, but that's the example that was given. John, do you have one?
This is sort of an overarching issue, which is, this is a legislative task force. How much should we put in the law? I mean, what will get the policy implemented? Is it a general law with job owning, or how do we want to structure this 18-year venture in legal terms? A goal is to get local economic benefit. Do we define things? Do we just say that? How much flexibility do we allow? I think that's an issue.
So it's the blend of flexibility in being able for this to operate, but also the parameters and structure that statutes and rules end up providing. So it's that balancing act.
Right. I think it would be unfortunate if everybody agreed that a project was the sort that they wanted to have for local benefits and the law did not allow it. And so we have to be cognizant of that the law is static and the underlying world is dynamic. Mm-hmm. And we're imperfect in our drafting. There's a lot of well-paid lawyers.
You can't legislate stupidity?
I think that there's an unclear process about how one becomes a seabed project. So I think that the process standpoint, making sure that that's clear and concise and easy to understand for people wishing to meet the definition to be considered a seabed.
What makes it unclear at this point in time?
Well, I've never actually had to do it because obviously that's not my role, but that's what I've heard from. So maybe that's a question for somebody that's gone through the process.
Okay. Let me just leave that. And if we can flesh that out as we go through, please feel free to offer it up.
I'd say local ownership and control and how those are defined and who defines them. I think that when you define those clearly and carefully, you both define some of the issues that you raised about jealousy, because you define who has a right to have a piece of it. And it's also, I think, addresses some of the issues of, how you structure this and the power and control, because if one trusts local communities to decide what's best for them and give and have them have a significant stake in determining what's acceptable for them, then that helps to define those kinds of power issues too. So I think that's where I come down is and then not only defining it, but how it's defined and who defines it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's define who defines it and how defined. I got the who defines it. Help me with the how it's defined.
The process.
Just simply the process. And three folks going in, you know, to a room with green eye shades and coming back with the definition is not your image of how it's defined. All I'm trying to do is get just simply an understanding of this. What's the process piece that is the...
Well, when you're defining for when a community defines for itself what it wants, you have to be careful to have the people in the community defining who they are and what they want for themselves, because sometimes other folks from the outside aren't part of, you know, they don't know what that community wants. And the question becomes, you know, who's a part of the community who defines what seabed is? It's a little bit like some of the organic, when the organic standards came up. You know, I don't think that Monsanto was at the table necessarily when they were figuring out what was organic and what was not organic. It's not to say they shouldn't have a say and they shouldn't have a role in it, but it's very important when you're defining these kinds of issues to understand, you know, who's really got a stake in it and, you know, who is going to, who is going to live or die based on what that definition is. And it's not necessarily everybody that has a potential interest in it, because some people would have just as soon killed the organic standard back in 72 or whenever it was done. You know, and that's not to say that I'm making anybody wrong there. It's just the truth.
And it is, you are defining local ownership and control, or defining, what are you defining?
Of local ownership and control.
So we're back this. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something you said maybe shift my thought, but okay. So these then become the big pieces.
Yeah, it's a bit tricky here because just like with the organic standard, the law actually defines the industry. And to a degree, the industry defines the law, too. But it also has to serve the group of constituents who really care about this, which are basically, you know, the people who live in those local communities and also, I think, people who buy the electricity.
Okay.
But, you know, that's not quite the same as just everybody in the entire universe.
Okay. Go ahead. An issue.
I'm going to take on my favorite subject, interconnection, viability, and approval. Just generally on the front end, there's a lot of people trying to plan these projects who haven't a clue whether or not their project is going to work at this particular point on the grid. And they can't find out until they get in the middle of the approval process whether or not they're even in the ballpark in terms of technical feasibility. And the second dimension to that is the... lack of investigation and opportunity into lower voltage connections and distribution side connections. There simply is only one place to go right now. Everybody's got it that they have to go to the FERC jurisdictional process, where in reality we could have an alternative process that's under state jurisdiction.
Okay, I got the low voltage connection. What I wrote down here is need for research. But then, from your comment, it seems bigger and broader than that, or different. I don't like this, and I just want you to clarify it. What is
sure.
What's the concern with low voltage? It just needs to be considered, or
well, for example, you know, we're all concerned about getting a megawatt of seabed on the grid. Right. But when we think of that, we think about one turbine, went down one place, one giant 1 megawatt turbine. But you could just as easily get that megawatt if you put up 100 little 10 kilowatt turbines at residential locations. Either way, you get a megawatt on the grid, but we don't think in that dimension of how to disperse this down to smaller size projects and into smaller pockets, if you will, on the grid.
Okay, so I have the one turbine versus 100 turbines, I guess over 1,000. Again, but the smaller pockets, the blend.
Sure.
Blend of that.
And the result from that is that you end up into different jurisdictional arenas when you do that. So we need to maximize our opportunities to utilize what jurisdictions we have as a state.
Okay. Issue.
Standard contracts for quality projects.
You got to help me with this one. The standards for the contracts, or is it the standard contract?
If a project meets specification, in other words, it's a good project,
mm-hmm.
it meets a criteria,
mm-hmm.
why then that project is eligible for a standard contract. And instead of having to negotiate and renegotiate and send it off someplace else to renegotiate and send it to the out-of-house attorneys so they get their time at it and then send it back to another set of attorneys and renegotiate for 18 months and still not have a deal. And meanwhile, the price has gone up. The turbine availability is gone. The interconnection queue has been jiggered horribly awry. And everybody wonders, why can't you do CBET? Standard issue contract, so that if you qualify with a good project, you've met spec in terms of a good location with a good technology at a reasonable price, and that's the proposal you're coming forward, you get it signed, sealed, and delivered that afternoon.
So to take it back as an issue, there is no, or it doesn't happen at this point in time, there's no standard contract for a quality project.
And instead it goes into this endless loop.
Okay. And with that, what you mean by that, if it meets these series of parameters, your criteria, then it should have, an automatic kick in, or an automatic with maybe some level of a one veto depending on, but still all of that defined in the criteria. Okay. Let me move over here. Thank you. Issue.
Simple. Put money in people's pockets. Community base should actually have some dollars flowing to local communities, and we should be transparent. And this, I think, comes down to a point of you have to start helping your community and multiple parties and just your respective self or your respective interests. That's how we get these things done.
The issue is, at this point in time, there is no money. Or the money is tied up somewhere to be able to put in people's
We have to have contracts that we can see transparency. We can get enough benefits to local communities. They have to be reasonable. We have to be able to make sure that we're not diluting what CBIT is by counting a construction company. Not that we shouldn't have some means or abilities of counting other entities or other local economic development opportunities, but really you have to put money in people's pockets if you're going to get these projects done.
Okay, and that money's not there at this point.
It's hard. It's getting harder to find.
Is it, where does that, oh.
Talking off of power contracts, off the PPAs.
Okay.
Just say first.
Okay. Issue.
I have a responsibility for unknown interconnection costs and project costs after the production tax credit expires. So I guess the issue to explain a little better is that because the interconnection queue is so long, we don't know what it will cost to interconnect projects, even projects that are low in the queue. So I think that the issue then is, and a lot of the projects are extending, need to extend their dates then into 2009, which is when the production tax credit is expired. So I think that we need something that affirms that if a utility enters into contracts with unknown interconnection costs and unknown whether you'll get the production tax credit, that that's a prudent action and that we can recover costs.
Okay. And you gave a list of unknown costs. The one I got was the interconnection cost. Give me a couple of the other ones.
And then the other one was the production tax credit, which will impact the overall cost to ratepayers. So kind of balancing that, making the projects viable by agreeing to pay their costs with the ratepayers not paying too much and not squeezing the utility in the middle.
Who needs to pay these costs?
Ratepayers eventually.
Okay.
Utility customers.
Again, I don't like what I'm writing up here, so I'll need it.
Because I'm assuming the taxpayers, you know, that part was out.
Okay, let me start this way, and then we can viable by making ratepayers pay, but not too much. Again, I don't like that. Help me clarify.
How to balance that? How to balance making the projects viable by agreeing to pay these two big unknown expenses that they have,
okay,
what it'll cost them to interconnect, and what their costs will be if the production tax credit isn't extended, with ratepayers not having to pay too much.
So it becomes who pays, and that balance between the ratepayers, whether it comes from the taxpayers, whether it comes from the utility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense?
Well, I wouldn't put the utility in that list, but yeah.
Okay. Issue.
Should have started with me, Charlie. All my ideas are already up.
You had the first shot. Come on. Anything else you want to flavor?
No.
You're going to pass. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
As a developer, all of the stuff that we identified at the last meeting and all of the stuff that we're talking about today are things that, I get paid to deal with and work with, and all of these things have to go into making a good seabed project. So I guess what I want to see out of the end of this, and an issue is that we need to have clear guidelines and rules that I can take after I work with my utility, work with my financier, put everything together. I want to be able to go into, the Department of Commerce's office and have them apply some floor standard for community return and, get that grant of seabed approval so that I can go to the utility and go to the financier and satisfy their needs for qualifying as a seabed project.
Okay, looking for clear guidelines in rules. You talked of a floor standard for community return. Did I get those words right?
Yeah,
close enough. Okay. So this is that opposite to where we talked about some of the flexibility and structure.
Well, we need to have flexibility in how I structure my deal, but there still has to be some floors for what are we counting as community return, what are we not counting as community return, and some evaluation of risk to the communities themselves also.
It seems like community return is the key thing that needs to be defined. Is that, am I close to that?
Yeah.
Okay. And again, included in that is the evaluation of risk. Yes, one issue.
I'll apologize for my voice. It's failing, so I'll keep this brief. And a lot of good ideas are already up there. I think on a slightly more global basis, how markets in the U.S. attract capital for wind changes as a function of public policy, and that stuff can change overnight. So you're going to find yourself, I think the state's going to find itself in constant competition with other areas. And I think if you look at the solar markets, some of the best places from an investment perspective for solar is out on the East Coast, which is not logically the best place for solar in the country. Oregon, with respect to wind, is a really great market because of their tax credit environment, but not a very great place for wind. It doesn't have the best wind resource. And as markets become more sophisticated, as public policy becomes more sophisticated, there's going to be competition in those areas. And however this works is going to have to be able to compete effectively with those areas, because the money is going to flow to where the investments are.
So it's, again, it's that how, again, the markets end up attracting the funds. You gave a couple of examples, Oregon for wind, and was the East Coast also for wind too?
No, for solar.
Thank you.
They've got a good tax credit environment out there for solar.
Okay.
I think if you look at the current, and I said I'd keep this short, I think if you look at the current MISO queue, just in study group 5, there's what, in wind, there's what, 2,000? Megawatt. I mean, there's 3,000 total megawatts, 2,000 of that's wind. I think our total installation for over the next 2 years, 08, 09, will probably, nationwide, will probably be about, what, 8,000 megawatts? If you look 08, 09, probably collectively. So the goal with Study Group 5 is to place 25% of the new installation in the U.S. in the region of the southwest corner of Minnesota for the most part. That doesn't seem likely. Just given those numbers. So there has to be a really competitive nature with respect to whatever gets put together here.
Okay. So there has to be, again, the competition piece plays in there. Hang on a second. Let's just a little pause. Excuse me. Issue.
There's a lot of really good ideas up there already. My favorite, which was interconnections, has already been taken, so I'll work down my list a little bit. I think one barrier or challenge is experience and staying power in putting projects together. I think the developers in the room and, you know, those of us that have dealt with them, you know, realize that it is a monumental task to put a good project together and keep all the stars aligned through the course of a project to do that. I guess I just see that as a barrier, as a challenge. You know, how do you do smaller projects, perhaps, that can compete on the same scale as larger projects where you're dealing with entities that have projects, you know, perhaps being done globally or certainly on a massive scale? You know, how do you make a smaller project or compete with a larger one like that?
So, again, just simply the experience and staying power of putting all these together, it's the complexity of it. Yes, an issue.
Yep, I'm going to go to my second issue, actually. Bypass my first most logical issue, but We've talked a lot about economic benefit to communities and individuals, but we are relying totally on each project to advocate for themselves that they have X, Y, and Z benefits. We never have done a thorough, peer-reviewed, robust study of economic benefits to Minnesota for different models of wind projects. We don't have any kind of analytical study that we've all agreed on the input assumptions, and therefore we have good, valid output to quantify, except from individual projects who advocate on each of their own behalfs, what they really bring to communities and local folks.
Okay, each project advocates for itself. There's that no broad study or, you know, the analytical study. Basically, what I got from that is to quantify what the value is from a broad standpoint.
What different types of wind project models bring to the community and to the individuals? We're counting on that happening, but right now each project for themselves goes into the Department of Commerce and says, this is what we bring to the table. And it may or may not be an objective look at what they actually do.
Okay, great. Yes, issue.
I'm going to
I'm going to bring up an issue, but it's going to reinforce that we need strong, clear policy. And I know we've already said that, but here's why. That it truly is not a level playing field right now. There are various and different types of communities working to put these projects together. And the communities are competing against different kinds of large corporations that are also trying to put these projects together. And they're also competing against utilities. And because of this competition, the communities do come in at a disadvantage. And so there needs to be, I mean, if it is a clear goal, and I would say maybe the one that Beth just talked about, the peer-reviewed study about the benefits, can help nail down, you know, the benefits that are received, and then what comes out of that is strong, clear policy. And I would say that the state has already made a huge, huge effort for strong, clear policy, but that is why we need to keep going down this route, is because we have a renewable energy standard, and if we want some of that, if we want a large portion or any portion of that to be community-based, then we have to fix this legislation in the manner in which we are. You know, the vision has to be a real good answer. And here's just one example about why it's still not working, okay? I'm not sure what that noise is, but in the respect that machines are in short supply everywhere, so everyone is working hard to get the best machines that they can. Right now, you know, and I will say that
there's a vibration somewhere.
Yeah. It's somebody's cell phone or BlackBerry, so if you could get it away from the microphone, if it's like sitting on the table, that's
hide them all underneath the desk and whatever. Okay, thanks.
And I'll say this delicately as I can, but it seems to me that there's a dividing line right now about the machines that the utilities are choosing to use for their own projects and the machines that most community wind projects have access to. And that the utilities don't seem willing to offer contracts to use the same for a community wind project to use the same machine that a utility project is using. So that's what I'm saying about strong, clear policy to level the playing field. That right now we are not there, we're not close.
You identified, I thought, three, and what I wrote here was communities competing, and utilities. I obviously got the communities in there and got the utilities. What was the third group?
There's IP.
Or is it just the two?
Well, there's independent power producers, okay, which are external to the state of Minnesota. And there's communities that are that are of Minnesota, and there are utilities.
Well, let me paraphrase back sort of what I was hearing you say, is that amongst these three groups, they are in some level of competition. But at this point in time, the competition is open-ended. So analogy, if you're playing a game, you don't know whether the game is baseball, football, soccer, or whatever. We need to have those sort of, again, the policy to at least identify what the standards are for the game.
Yes.
Efficient? Okay. Hold on. Let me write that down. I remember it. Okay.
And,
issue.
And, but just that the reason for that policy is to prov- is to help to level that playing field. So a lot of work has to go into the policy to make it clear. And I know other people have said that. But it's really important to how the game is played.
Okay, great. Yes?
Risk-reward. You need to, what we're talking about here in many cases is that the reward, the landowners must be commensurate with the risk. And I think there's different project models out there that can reflect that. I'm not sure when we look at the flip model, which is the preeminent model of seabed, whether that risk, especially in the back end, the 20 years with these turbines, is really something they really want to get involved with. Many people are farmers, community owners. They're not experts in managing wind farms. So I think we need to look at projects and commensurate with risk-reward.
Again, the balance in that.
The balance. I think the other is that a major issue is...
Hold on. We'll open it up. I've held everybody to one so far. We'll give you a chance to come back to your next one here. Just a second. Give a few moments to... And I'm going to cover these up for now. I may regret this, but we'll see whether we get there. What am I on? N-O-P-Q. Yes.
You guys have done a pretty good job, thorough job. The one I would add would be a focus. Our policy should focus on a net economic development benefit to the state.
Meaning what?
Meaning that you take all the sides into account. I mean, we've heard some discussion about the ultimate ratepayer is the one that has to pay the bill for whichever resources the utility picks, and seabed should be designed, our policy should be designed to make sure that the projects are competitive with other projects. And there's a bunch of ideas at the table here to make that happen, but that the customer needs choices and their utility needs choices. And one of the goals should be that the rates I think on our sheet here it says don't rob St. Peter to pay St. Paul, and that's, I think what I mean is that, you know, if we're losing competitiveness on one end of the system, then we haven't done a good job of creating something that's a good net economic development benefit to the state.
Okay, so it's allow for those choices across the board. Yes, issue.
I would say one word, patience. And that encompasses a lot of things. I think when we look at the concept seabed in the terms of utility planning, it's a relatively new concept. What have we been talking about seabed? How long? 3-4 years, George, has it been? I mean, it takes a long time to work through these deals. And I'm not saying patience on one side, on both sides. I've worked through some of these contracts before. And they're long and difficult processes. But it's no different than trying to sell power supply to a community that wants, you know, firm power supply. These take long, arduous hours to work through. This is a long-term business transaction. And we all have to step back and have patience. We can't just shove this ahead without looking at all the things that we have to work through in order to make this happen. And a lot of those things we'll never be able to control. It's the marketplace. You start legislating those things, you'll never get any traction whatsoever.
You and me, Tim. Somebody said something earlier, and I'm not going to be able to find it now, but the collection of variables there, and there you just can't control for everything.
Right.
So you're not going to create the perfect widget, but you got to create a widget that's workable.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes, issue.
This kind of cuts across a number of different issues. I might suggest long-term project viability. It hasn't really influenced where we go. We're willing to take a whirl on any of these things, but let me tell you why I think that's an issue. It gets into the financing issue because I really don't think, the gentleman down here mentioned it earlier, I don't really know that people have a good feel for the flip structure. And the flip structure can be real kind of miserable in terms of actually nailing down the financing for a project. There are a lot of financial folks that really wonder, even with the IRS rulings, how that's really going to work. Really, what is it? What is going to be the market valuation after year 10 when the PTC goes away? How will that valuation really be calculated, and will the people in the project have the financial wherewithal to, in fact, take that project on and make it go forward? So there's some sort of, if you will, financial questions and potential instability there. And it relates then also to your ability to have long-term O&M done. Essentially, in a nutshell, you're investing oftentimes heavily on the front end of a project with an expectation, and this is more than just for the utility. This ought to be an expectation for the state of Minnesota, with an expectation that you get 10, 12, 20 years out, that what it is you're planning on doing is actually going to be there and be deliverable. And it never ceases to amaze me, and so all of the people related to turbines in the room, please bear with me. This isn't a cheap shot. But when we very aggressively started down this path before any of the laws were passed in the state, I had a tendency to believe that the wind industry was relatively mature. Wrong. There is plenty of problems with equipment out there, whether it's gearboxes, whether it's generators, whether it's blades, whether it's ballast tanks and side blades. These are tricky things to make and have long-term viability work. I'm sure we'll get over that, but I don't think it's going to be something that's going to happen as quickly as I had hoped.
Long-term viability, I got the economics piece. You need to run the numbers. But the last piece is also more of a maintenance mechanical.
Well, it has a lot to do with where Glenn, maybe this will draw it together. It has to do with where Glenn was going, actually. Glenn was suggesting these are dicey, complicated things to put together on the front end. True. I think they're also dicey, complicated things to operate for the long-term life of the asset. Much different than a friend of mine who has been in the industry a lot longer than me once told me, hey, how hard can this be? It's just like putting a tractor 80 meters in the air. Wrong.
Okay, next. We've got a couple more. Yes. Couple more. yes, one, two.
My issue was touched upon, but I'll just kind of expand on it a little bit. The market does move very, very rapidly. Things really change a lot, and there is a danger in putting something really specific in legislation that we do have to live with year after year. And if something does need to change, I could see us coming to revisit this year after year at the Capitol to kind of keep up with the marketplace. And that's something that I think is an issue. So there's a danger, I think, in putting into legislation kind of like a specific financial model, or this is how,
boom, structured, and 2 years out, it's all blown up.
It's going to change.
Okay, great. Did I get around the table to everybody? So I started here. Okay, I know the gentleman back there had another one, and I'll take a couple of other.
My point is second point is margins, and
margins. Second phase margins?
Margins.
Okay.
Margins on projects. My experience is that margins on the profitability of these projects is getting thinner and thinner and thinner as a result of a couple things. One, there's pricing pressure from utilities when they enter into these agreements. The cost of interconnection and transmission is going up. The supply chain is going up for turbines and other components. And the cost of actually building these is increasing. So the margins on these projects are becoming a lot thinner. If you look at the on the flip structure, if you look at the internal rate of return calculation of when that will occur on some of these projects, it's not going to happen at year 10.
Right.
It's happening somewhere around year 15 and maybe even later. It's because the margins on these projects are very, very thin. So That means these landowners or the local group are going to get less return on their investment, and they're taking more risk on that back end. So, you know, we're dealing with rate pressures and we're dealing with escalating costs, and so these margins. And in fact, my discussions with some developers is that they're not looking at this market anymore because the margins are so thin on these projects in Minnesota that they can put their projects somewhere else and make more money. So
longer.
You listed four margins. I got three of them. You had pricing, interconnection, building, and
supply chain.
Supply. Thank you. Okay. So again, looking at the margins from
and that goes into my when I was discussing risk reward, that was all part of it there.
Yeah. Other things that are not up here. Other things that you had jotted down that are not up here. Let's go here. Let's go here. Go ahead.
The other issue I'd like to put up is the issue of feed-in tariffs.
What kind of tariffs?
Feed-in tariffs. So it's feed-in tariffs. And I think that's important because it actually addresses a lot of the issues here. One of the issues that they found in Europe, for example, with turbine quality, and we like to point out that the Nordex turbines that have been running in Europe, a model that was just installed in northwestern Minnesota, has had one gearbox failure in 7 years for the entire design run. And the reason I think that is because under a feed-in tariff structure, people make money based on how much power they generate and how efficiently they operate. So the more efficiently they operate and the longer they run, the more money they make. Under the current structures here, the flip, basically the developer and the equity partner are out of the picture fairly soon. As soon as they get their money, they're out of the picture. And that's a problem because it means that the turbines tend to be designed just long enough to keep the equity partners and the developers happy. Whereas in Europe, if it doesn't keep running for the entire 20 years of the contract, they don't make money. So anyway, they just found that those structures have produced higher quality machines in Europe for whatever reason, and we need to think about that. The other thing is that when you're talking about surety of income, and the feed-in tariffs are essentially a cost-plus structure, not unlike what's been provided now by the legislature to Xcel Energy. And what happens with the feed-in tariffs in Europe is that they adjust those prices depending on, as Ingrid said, you know, the costs change over time, the market changes over time. Well, they adjust those amounts over time based on various factors to make sure that the amount that people are making is fair in any given situation. And they usually ramp the prices down over time. So the bottom line coming out of Europe is that most of the costs are believed to be less from feed-in tariff. The actual cost to society is significantly less. And probably the biggest factor is, frankly, the cost of money. One of the issues that we've been talking about here is risk. Well, when there's less risk, there's less cost of money. And, you know, that is the bottom line for it. So the question is that when you provide a payment structure that provides for less risk, then the banks are going to loan it at a less interest rate. That means that more money stays locally and less of it goes to the capitals, the people that provide the capital. And that's what they found, is that it's just simply been cheaper to do it that way in Europe than it's been to do other kinds of structures. Or there's other kinds of model, too. And we know that historically, you know, that, for example, the standard offers in California, actually, there were some problems with them, but they actually did produce putting machines in the ground. You know, since the RES passed in California, at least from what I checked last winter, very few new projects were put in the ground because there weren't the standard offers, the financial structures in place. In California, their system is really bogged down because of that. So there are models out there that can definitely do this. The question is just picking them that are going to work.
Is there, with the feed-in tariff piece, you talked about Europe model. Is it a Europe or is it a specific country in Europe?
It is used in, particularly in Denmark and Germany, and in Spain has a hybrid model. Other places have RESs, but when they've looked at development rates, comparing them between a pure RES structure and or a feed-in tariff or hybrid feed-in tariff RES structure, then the countries that have some component of a feed-in tariff in their systems have developed at a much more quick, rapid rate than other countries. And, you know, that's also been true, for example, with the solar energy industry. You know, as the gentleman from John Deere said, You know, Germany's got the hottest solar energy, solar market in the entire world because of that, and it's brought lots of money to Europe, both in terms of manufacturing, in terms of installation. And, you know, the kinds of structures that I'd be looking at the East Coast are, you know, the feed-in tariff structures or more, you know, heavily incentive structured in New England. That's why it's really working in New England. So, but that's it.
Okay. There were three hands. The gentleman here, then back over there. So I don't whose hand up was first? Or, one, two, and three. Go ahead, sir.
This relates to the fuel for a wind project called Wind, and it as it relates to seabed projects. I guess I have a multiple choice question that kind of illustrates the issue. All those in the room who know of a seabed project that has more than 18 months worth of wind data as the basis of it being economic or a good project, raise your hand.
18 months?
18 months or more.
Some out there, yeah.
At least 18 months of solid wind data to support the economics of the project. At least 18 months.
On-site data?
Yes, not WindLogix, an actual Met Tower that you've accumulated one full, you know.
How about production data?
Not production, just
okay,
at
okay.
The site.
I think we got okay. The point that the wind data is limited.
Okay.
Is that reasonable?
The second one is okay. The other end of the spectrum. I had three answers, but I'll go to the third answer. Is how many seabed projects are people aware of where there's no wind data and they're relying strictly on just simulation of the wind using WindLogix or some other tool as a basis of making a commitment to the project, turbines, et cetera? Well, I think what I'm trying to illustrate here is if you look at seabed projects and you look at the large developers out there, there seems to be a large discrepancy between the amount of solid wind data that a seabed project has associated with it than what a large developer requires as a basis of their making their projects economic. They have at least 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 years of wind data. That's my experience. Seabed projects, because everyone's trying to get them done fast, everyone's, you know, you have pressures for financing, you have pressures for availability of turbine supply. I think that there's a scare. The issue is to make sure that we have there's adequate wind data to support the project, and that you start the wind data measurement with a Met Tower as soon as you think of the project, basically, and you continue that wind measurement for the remaining part of its evaluation. And if there is a project that is built, you continue that wind data collection for the entire life of that project. I think that's a very important component for going forward for seabed projects.
So the point of that the wind data is limited. There's some use of simulated wind data. You sort of use 18 months as a floor, for lack of a better term.
Well, I'd say that the minimum would be a year.
Okay.
A year to, but then that year has to be a solid year. I mean, there are instances where people will put up a Met Tower, they'll run it for a year, and then finally go back and find out that the anemometer froze for 3 months.
Okay.
Well, so they missed 3 months
to,
of data.
Clarify. So
on this question, is this a, it doesn't strike me this necessarily as a seabed issue. It's it might be an any wind project issue, right? That why would it be specific to a seabed project?
Okay, our experience is that the people that have been doing wind projects longer, the bigger developers, they have a more established protocol. They check more. They have remote sensing for when the data is being compiled. The smaller developers, they may not have remote transfer of the data. They may be required to go out to the Met Tower and actually check to see if it is compiling data and so forth. So there seems to be a concern that if you're not closely watching the Met Tower, you may lose very important wind data at a given point in time. And you need to have, that needs to, that the standard of wind measurement needs to rise consistently across the board for all small project developers, seabed project developers. to ensure that when they go to the table or when they go to having financiers evaluate the projects, turbine suppliers, you want to look at site suitability, that they have very strong and consistent wind data, because that could be a major problem for them.
And playing off Mike's piece, it's just a broad issue that obviously plays into the data that we're gathering for seabed, but it may not be something that we address directly, but it may be something that we need to at least consider and address in directly. Is that a reasonable statement from that?
Charlie, just real quick. I mean, the issue I think is ultimately going to be is our requirements are changing. It used to be all the mesoscale modeling would be investment grade, you know, became through a reputable firm. And we're looking at the requiring more and more on-site data because we're recognizing discrepancies, material discrepancies. Where we can't actually count on just one. We're looking for both. Because we want to see, because you can do 2 years with the wind data and try to correlate it, but have a rough correlation. You could have taken that during an exceptional wind year. You could have taken it during an abysmal wind year. And you need some other sources. So there's going to be a lot of jockeying around. And these requirements are going to change over time. So the experience going forward may not be, the past experience may not be valid going forward.
Okay. A couple of other comments on this, because we've got a couple of other people here that have, okay, let's, just to comment in. Okay. We've got the issue here of limited data. If it's a way to solve it, we'll come at it at our next meeting. So sort of hold that thought until the next time, if you can, with those other folks that raised their hand. The gentleman here had an issue.
Operational and technical item that I think we just take for granted, mm-hmm. and sometimes get, I think, overlooked, and it is not intended to be safety.
Oh, okay. Yes.
When we start talking into low voltage distribution lines, distributed generation interconnection, have to keep in mind safety aspects of that because there's greater exposure to distribution line workers. In those circumstances. And I know when Mike and others bring up they don't intend or don't even think about that, or not think about, but they're not intending that any of this not be safe. But it's something that when you get into, you do have to keep, we should keep that in mind.
Safety.
We're going to get into low voltage discussion.
Okay, safety all the way across the board from installation to probably completion or even post, you know.
Yeah, and I
installation,
know
operation, and even dismantling when it becomes, you know, if we're thinking that 15, 20 years down into the future.
Yeah, okay. I know it's such an obvious thing and it's easy to say, but I think it should be. Maybe it could just be a parenthesis next to what Mike was talking about.
Okay. Any others? The gentleman here, and then one more here, and was there a hand over here? Okay, let's try and take these as the last three. Go ahead.
This is a cross-cutting issue, too, kind of with transmission, probably the level playing field, and maybe with George's comment about, or several others, kind of the complexity of the contracts. I would call it curtailment sharing. We had to eliminate a number of projects right out of the bat as we assess the probability of curtailment if, in fact, the agency was going to bear 100% of curtailment risk. The typical kind of argument is, well, gee, your utility, you have control over curtailment. I have to tell you, I have no more control over curtailment than anybody in this room. And as a result of that, our posture on that is, why wouldn't we share that? And oftentimes that can drag into lengthy contract issues. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's resolved right away where the project financiers say, you've got to be kidding me, and they just walk. That's a substantive issue until we end up with enough transmission that we likely aren't going to be caught with curtailment issues.
Okay. Okay. Other issues? There, and then there was another hand here. Go ahead.
Yep, and I'll, my number one favorite issue is lack of transmission. I think we've talked about interconnection, but until we figure out how to move transmission through the process, and I'm not talking just about high voltage, I'm talking about lower voltage, things that will keep wind development happening in the next several years.
And are we talking lines here?
Sure.
Talking poles and...
We're talking wires in the air and steel in the ground.
And also we're talking about substation transformer enhancements.
Okay.
I would say transmission and other elements that are going to actually allow construction of wind farms to happen in the next several years before we have our next large high-voltage line completed.
Okay. There's a hand over here.
Yeah,
here, and then over there.
I just wanted to tee a little bit off of that comment on safety. Generally, we've got these safety issues addressed in technical standards already. We have been for years. And I have always run into people who aren't engineers, I happen to be one, who don't have the understanding of the technical issues the way engineers do, and who think that the technical issues are a problem. And they, from the perspective of an engineer, they're not problems. They're just criteria on how we do things. And so the perception that technical issues are a barrier is a problem.
Okay. So, I mean, the technical issues, the standards are there, whether they're, are they ANSI standards, are they
Yeah, there's some
standards?
Of them, IEEE, NERC, they're all in place.
I mean, they're there,
and all we
got driven
to
do,
yeah,
by
we
safety.
Respect them, and we operate within them.
Okay, one, two, and then, three, and then I want to try and cut our time, because we are getting
I think that we need a fundamental ideological shift that community-based should become more focused. I mean, if anybody wants to debate the fact that community-based is not good for the state, I welcome that discussion. I mean, I think we're all in agreement that this is good for the state. So why is it so difficult to get these projects done? I mean, we should all be focused on doing this because it's the right thing to do for the state, not just for our own interests, but what's good for the state.
And the issue there is... It was more of a statement that the community should be the focus on this?
Right.
Okay. And work from that way. Gentleman here, and then do you have one? Okay.
Yeah, I just have a question. A couple of these different ones brought up about the economic analysis. Weren't we trying to get a consultant to do some of this kind of stuff, and are we moving forward with that?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
And part of it would be some input from here on what they want that consultant to do.
Okay.
Yeah, it's building on this idea of transmission adequacy. I think everybody recognizes that we need additional infrastructure. The point is that we can either do smart transmission or we can do dumb power lines. And so it's a matter of what is the infrastructure that we need in order to serve the interests that we're trying to promote, as opposed to conventional sort of the way we used to do it. Transmission doesn't necessarily get us where we want. It's possible to spend billions of dollars building the wrong infrastructure.
Okay. And I just put into the lack of transmission, what's the infrastructure that we need?
Well,
that driven by need as much as anything.
Well, but by the objective that we're trying to do here. I mean, there's all sorts of ways of meeting a, quote, need. And there's smart ways of doing it, and there's dumb ways of doing it.
Okay. Ian, yes.
I think that another issue is the issue of how to regulate the horse race, because we all know that this is basically a horse race between a lot of different energy supply options, and it really depends on how fast these things come out. So, you know, what gets built when is a matter of how quickly it gets developed. So while I appreciate there's a need for patience, I also have to appreciate that there's a need for impatience too. that, you know, we could also be, say, patients with bidding in big transmission lines. We could say, let's be patient putting in coal plants. We could say, let's be patient with all this stuff. You know, that's all true. It all takes time. I used to develop clean coal power plants. You know, I get that. It takes a long time. But at the same time, the question is, how do you mediate the horse race? How do you say that we're going to have, you know, this be developed at a certain pace? You know, when the Fenton Wind project just went in down in Chandler, that's a, what, a 205-megawatt project? That decreased Community Wind's market share by 5%, from about 30% down to 5%, based on the latest Windustry database plus the WEA, latest things downloaded from the WEA. That's, you know, 5% drop in market share is a pretty significant market share drop from one project. It wouldn't take many more of those to have Community Wind have a very, very small market share in Minnesota. So it is a horse race. And how do we mediate that so that the horse race is fair? Or we don't have a horse race anymore, we just decide what this is going to be. But if it's just left up to whoever sort of scrambles to the top first, that's not necessarily what's best for the state. That's not necessarily the most economical. That may have more to do with simply the ability to manipulate or maneuver the situation to their to a particular sector's advantage. And we all get that. But that may not be the best thing for the state.
Again, it goes back to the things that we've talked about before as far as balancing between some of these issues. And be it in, I don't want to say standards, but the structure, the statutes, that piece with, again, the flexibility and the timing and patience piece. It's timing-wise. It's 11 o'clock. I'm also starting to hear the same things a second time, slightly altered a little bit. So I'm going to take, let's take a 10-minute break. We'll come back. We'll look at what we've got here. I know there's a couple of hands. We can add some stuff in as we need to, but I want to look and see what we've got up here. Again, I'm starting to hear things again. Let's come back at 10 after, and we'll do similar to what we did the last time. Is we got a bunch of comments here. What are the common themes? What are we starting to hear? And again, we've already started along that line anyway. Gosh, mine plays into, this one plays into, that one plays into. Let's identify those as opposed to 28 or whatever that we have here. Let's see if we can boil these down to under a dozen. Same thing.
That's been the mantra for
years now.
For more toilet.
Yeah, oh, this is what we're doing.
That would be preferable, I think.
I'm not saying that's seriously, you know. We're going to study small ones and big ones.
Isn't it really? I understand the
happening done.
It's not the march. Also, the idea of being that supports not even raised.
And you know that methods of stalling decisions.
I don't want to.
It is about my point. Very well.
I'm just thinking that there's some narratives out there. The not the playing field for small guys and big guys.
It's
so much easier if we said,
we can move side.
We'll buy our games from you.
Someone.
Well, there's no public purpose to Minnesota doing this. I mean, no public purpose in Minnesota having small guys in Iowa. So
something
yeah.
Does count. And squeaky clean like we always are, someone will still say, just kidding. Okay? So then we need to get beyond that. 20 minutes from now, this whole thing is a little extreme, which is all about some sort of perverse view of economic development. See, this is and something called the seabed that lives inside this, as opposed to here's a renewable state, here's economic. And that's a good thing. We shouldn't drive our policy based on this.
Challenge.
challenges, what are we going to boil down?
Yeah, but,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
That takes even more of a lead time than the project. So,
here we go.
That's
my question. Do we have?
You got it. That's going to
happen. This seems like we're talking about easier to do because of having a tracker in our country.
I don't know. I'd have to ask you looking at some way that a lot of us probably have to say that later.
In my mind,
This is yours.
But there will be plenty of people that will know all that stuff.
It's also been to a
as opposed to a couple of
more time on this.
I'm not ready to look at my
something,
down on my inbox.
Plus, your cadre wouldn't let me add.
Right.
Most of these places have so far.
Not really?
Our only good hope is that it's actually coming.
Planning process, which kind of overlaps and kind of doesn't.
But do you think
right now it's just beyond our
control? So, you'll see plans get set up in a certain way.
And as a state, you
I appreciate
you're a state for a trade education program.
Because of where you use them, otherwise, it won't be
next. Just general understanding of what I needed. Short courses, I like short courses.
Absolutely.
Never thought about the change.
Two people are interested.
Also, sharing the rest.
They could do it. Okay, that's not an issue. Absolutely.
Exposes them to a lot of mysteries between what we're going to cover.
It's so insidious and behind the scenes. Back in 2003, we had. It kind of relates to your
memory. Oh, great. Thanks. Good to see you. Okay, great. I can understand that. Go make some money.
Okay. So,
yeah, he's got to work. with project development over here.
Oh, okay.
And they're a big player in solar.
Effort. It sounds like they were going to initiate an effort with a bunch of the developers.
Anyway, so it seems like it comes down to develop that standard. He had mentioned it to us. The first one was my
More than likely, if there doesn't include any.
That's his job. Yeah.
I think it's so important.
Let's get going. Let's come back together. Sorry, I got looking up here on the charts. We'll come back together in 2 minutes.
Those are the three things that I think are dicey.
Let's see what we've got up here. In front of you are the expense.
Why should they get rid of something they have no idea?
Hey Charlie, we have this other issue that we need to be dealing with about the wind.
Maybe it'll come up when we start talking about solutions, but what I've always wanted to say is not only what constitutes the work, but I want to know.
So maybe we can, as a note for the next meeting,
we're going to take a bunch of local things and look to this business.
Low traffic mobility is a very high wind. I would say on one hand, you're not going to use
I just wish I could get some money out of it instead of just cursing at people who want shingles out of my house.
Residential. I haven't, you know, it's not one of my utilities, but the big residential on that meter curve is North Carolina. I see it when I go to conferences all the time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Does Xcel do any business in New Mexico?
Our
stakeholders. What does net metering look like there?
Okay, let's get started on this. Jenny's got a very important point on you guys getting paid to do this. So we got to listen, okay? Take it away.
Try to set it
up. I have. Yeah, I was just going to mention that there's these mileage reimbursement forms that were on top of your agendas when you sat down. So if you want to get mileage reimbursed for that, for attending this meeting, and thank you for doing so, just turn those into myself or Andy, and we'll get those reimbursement forms signed off on. So if not, that's not a big deal.
We've also had another issue brought up that was in legislation that deals with wind property rights. It was a specific piece in the legislation. We were talking about it here. It sounds like it fits in with some of these things. I think we'll probably try and slide it in. Hopefully we'll be able to sort of try and slide it in at the next meeting. But in all honesty, I need to know a little more about it before I can put together a formal structure for a meeting on it. But while the next meeting is going to be looking at, okay, how do we start to address some of these, we'll probably try and bring that wind property rights piece into this also. It's more just a heads up. You know, I've now told you I think my knowledge of it, but we'll get more detail on it and get it out to you. I want to take a look, and again, as we did the last time, you know, we're at the 20-some sort of issues up here, and I want to take a look and see if we can boil these down to a little more manageable, and I apologize for talking with my back to you, a little more manageable collection here so we can work from. And what I've been literally trying to do during the break and sort of what I've outlined in, or highlighted anyway, in red, are the key or critical words that we got up here. It may not be your complete thought, but I want to at least be able to go through these with some sort of a words that can help sort of stimulate some thinking. And then there is method to the madness. If you hear a couple of them that are sort of going after the same issue, addressing the same issue, call them out by their letter. So you can work that way. Let me just go through them. The ones that we identified were A, limitation in securing financing. B was the whole political reality of the no new taxes, and that limits the pool of funds that are available to try and accomplish this. C is we identified it, the economic development jealousy. It's basically who gets the money and some of the issues that are there. Again, it goes back to, I think, a money aspect. The balance of how much should be put into law. And I think this has been a theme that sort of goes all the way through. We need to have a level of flexibility, but we need to also have standards and a level of structure. I'm guessing, I'll front and load this. This is a theme, but I'm guessing there's also going to be sub-themes underneath this. An unclear or confusing process for becoming a CBED. We need clarity and it easier to work with and understand. The local ownership and local control, the definition in that, who does it? How is it defined and the process for defining it? How do these systems interconnect with the grid? limited, or it's not happening as far as the standard contract for quality projects. You know, the aspect, the image was, if it meets these criteria, it should pretty easily move into the process. We, again, a money piece of putting the money in the people's pockets. It's not currently there at that point in time. Again, another big piece here are the unknown costs that are in this. Two of them that were identified were the interconnection costs and the production tax credit. And then how do those costs get covered or paid? K is, community return and some level of standards and understanding of and or process for evaluating the risk. Again, the whole market involvement in this, and it's the attraction of capital in this way. The experience and staying power in putting together these sort of complex systems. For a large project, you've got the volume there, or the scale to be able to do it. There's some there's may not be the scale there for smaller projects. The study or analytical study on quality of what the value is. This becomes a data piece. The various competing pieces in there and the need for leveling the playing field between the independent power producers, the communities, and the utilities were at least some of the participants that were identified. At least define what the game is, if not start to define some of the specifics inside that. The whole piece of sort of risk and reward, this one's identified out specific landowners to match the risk. Again, allowing choices to get an economic benefit to the state. A patience here that this is complex and to sort of balance the need to do it as quickly as possible with maybe not necessarily needing to have the perfect widget in place, I guess is my paraphrasing of that. To some degree, with that, the ability to have sort of a long-term project viability. Blending with that, the market moves rapidly. Obviously, legislation does not. The aspect of the, you know, the margins, getting into a costing piece again, of pricing, interconnection, building, and the supply chain. Feed-in tariffs, I'm taking this as another cost piece. I say that with a question mark because it's my level of understanding, but from hearing the comments made, and there were some examples here with the European model, data. Again, on just simply the fuel, which is wind, safety, which gets into kind of following some of the standards, but just safety all the way through this process from beginning to end. The complexity of the contracts, curtailment sharing, and the transmission piece in this, the lack of a transmission, for lack of a better term, structure out there and the elements to put it all together, and then when that's done, to put it together in a proper fashion, which is more mixing and matching the various viewpoints, the need for this to be community-based, and again, comes back to again, I love the term of regulating the horse race. Again, there needs to be that balance between we needed this done yesterday versus, gosh, we don't even have the stuff there to, you know, get things in place. So there's a whole sort of balancing piece and act with this. As I was reading them through, as we look through, let me leave this up for now. Where do you see common themes? Where do you see some of these issues that, you know, we're really talking about this? We've identified some as far as cost. We've identified some as data. We've identified some as sort of that balance piece. I'm a little concerned that each one of those three are maybe too general, but if we can get into maybe a layer below that, that's, I think, what I'm looking for. Where do you see common themes here? Yes?
Oh, well, I think one of them is the community return of these projects.
Give me a couple that sort of fit with that.
Oh, I didn't write down any of the numbers, but mine and I think Andrew's and Lisa's and Beth's all address those community return issues.
Okay. And is it a community return from a financial standpoint or from a what standpoint?
Yeah.
Primarily financial. Okay. And the issue with this is having a viable community return? Sufficient?
Well, setting those standards for community return.
Okay.
Really talking about defining what is community return?
Part of it's standards, part of it's defining, and it would be, I guess my term would be, you know, viability. I mean, and I think that's sort of the same as the define. Okay. Do we see maybe a second issue up here? Yes.
I think closely related to that is some of the issues of ownership and control.
As to who has it or who establishes it, or both?
I think both.
Okay.
Because basically they're both defining what is community wind. And just like with the organic stuff, you can define things by a particular standard, but you can also define things by behavior. And in the organic standards, they didn't define it in the United States by standards, but rather by behavior. So if you do certain kinds of things, then you are organic. The same way that can be done here, it's possible to set up business standards that says if you do things in a certain way, then you are community wind, and we'll let the economic benefits flow and be trusted. The communities would figure out what that is. And there's some reasons why they did it that way is in the United States is because when you start talking numbers, you can argue about numbers forever.
Mm-hmm. The old Disraeli lies, damn lies, and statistics. And what I'm hearing here is there's no clear definition for ownership and control at this point in time. It needs to be better, needs to be defined and or better defined.
And this relates, I think, very closely to the possibly another issue, which would be regulatory stability, which was brought up by a number of people. You know, because the more that this gets changed all the time, the harder it is for anybody to really invest, control, regulate, monitor, or develop projects. So having the definition be stabilized, but also the incentive structures be stabilized is very important.
Is that processes?
Excuse me?
Is that processes?
I'm sorry,
processes. The variety of processes that you need to go through, does that fit under there?
Yeah. Any of the whole regulatory structure and program needs to be stabilized for there to be a good business climate.
And if I can front it, other thoughts or ideas. Go ahead.
Power contracts, both structure and process. It seems there were some concerns, for example, about the long-term viability processes and that issue about wind, you know, whether or not the 2 years into the project, whether or not the return is going to be there, and so maybe we could address some multiple issues with looking at power contract.
Okay, so structure and process for the power contracts,
standardized agreements,
and is it standardization or is it more of a cost determination or a data determination. I guess that's sort of the thing that's playing around in my mind.
Yeah, standardization is a component, but maybe cost flexibility might be an issue. It impacts the rate of return for the equity investor, long-term O&M costs, lots of different components.
Okay, somebody had a hand back here. Yes.
The whole interconnection and transmission infrastructure piece.
Okay. Again, the interconnection, the transmission infrastructure, the grid that's not there and how it's built.
Let me just add, if you can't deliver any of this stuff to load, you don't have a project. So, you can work frontwards or backwards, but at the end of the day, if ratepayers are really paying for these costs, they want to be able to get the energy. So it kind of goes unsaid, I think.
Okay. Other sort of broad issues that we've talked about here, and I'll go back and check through these. I just want to get them up.
With the margins and the financing and some other risk reward, I think you're really looking at the economics of a wind project.
Yeah. Maybe
that's the right word. Whatever you do with seabed, whatever local benefit you're going to take out of these projects is based upon the economics of it. And are what they are, and you need to understand them in order to figure out what's the best way to bring this local benefits to the landowners and then public owners.
Well, again, just send me the economic realities, risk, reward, and it would be the risk and reward. It's the balance there between the multiple players, or can we identify a couple of key players that may help drive the conversation? Is it the multiples?
Well, I was just going to say that you have the economics of the project and, the economics of your power company and your financers, but you have those two forces working on a project, and then we're trying to also squeeze out that community return in there too. And I think that part of what we're trying to do is protect that bubble of community return and make sure it doesn't get too deflated.
So we've got community return. We've got the
utility.
Thank you. Utility, and the third one was the
financier.
And the ratepayer.
Oh, I guess I'm assuming that the utility is looking out for the ratepayer.
The blend of those layers together inside that economic reality. Other sort of broad issues, gentlemen back and then up here.
Competition. I think that Todd pointed out that we are competing with other states, other regions for financing money, for turbines, for developers, build projects in this state. And they're looking at our state and they're looking at other states, and they're going to allocate their resources to where they're going to get the best return on their investment. So I think there is a sufficient amount of competition And that's including looking at other states and how they promote renewable energy in that state or wind power in that state, and be competitive on a policy perspective as well.
Right.
Does this blend with anything else, or does it stand on its own, the competition piece? Yeah, let's stay with the competition.
I think it's really on its own, because the policies that we put in place the policies about all these other things are going to either allow equity to flow into the state or not. You're going to allow people to participate in these wind projects or not. It's not just the return. It's how easy is it to do a project in Minnesota? Do they have to jump through a million hoops versus, 100 in another state?
Okay. Here and then here. Sorry.
Yeah, and I think competition also should stand alone, and I think that's why things like the feed-in tariff. But it is related to
number four, and maybe a little addition down there where it says cost flexibility that Mike CTS do, which I agree with. The two other factors are there. One is clarity. So you need flexibility yet have a clear structure so that it isn't so flexible that it's just mush. And the next one I think is something that Andrew said, which is it just whizzed in my head. Transparency. So that we have some ability to be clear about who's getting what and how the whole system is working.
I think seven can stand alone, but I think we need to recognize that it also feeds into number six about the economic realities, because we are competing for turbine supply and resources on a both international and national basis. And if we're not creating a good environment to draw those resources to seabed projects, well, then we haven't really succeeded at all.
Okay. Are there other broad issues that we haven't identified in our seven points here? We've got community return, financing, ownership and control, defining regulatory stability through incentives and through the stop process, structure and process for the power contracts, the interconnection, the whole sort of transmission grid, in infrastructure, the risk and reward for the various parties involved, the economic realities in there, and then the competition for resources. What other issues have we talked about? What other issues have we identified here, or are these the main ones?
I think just generally the whole issue of timing, of interconnection, contract negotiation, you know, the delay in turbine supply, the mismatch between contract structure, I don't know how you quantify it a little in more detail, but we need to do something that reduces the timing in a number of areas.
Yeah, there's an interconnectedness of this that I can't.
Yeah, well,
it fits in with timing. I don't know.
Literally, on our first project, we had a term sheet with a utility, then we had a PPA with a different one. Then it took us so long to get through the MISO process that the production tax credits didn't get extended. And then we had to come back to the state and try to get some more time to actually get the project in, so that we could still make use of the state incentive to do a good project. I mean, there's all of these pieces of these projects have to come together in order to actually get them in the ground.
Mm-hmm. And it also relates to the horse race too. That you know, that how this all gets together, timing has a lot to do with what gets built when and by who.
I would call it project certainty.
Ooh.
I mean, are we going to have, you know, are you certain that your project's going to go, that it's going to be viable? Are all those pieces going to be there? Will the utility be able to count on somebody once they've signed a PPA? And
okay, so the issue of project certainty, which has a timing piece to it, it's got a coordination piece to it between the steps and the parties. Okay, any other sort of broad issues that we haven't brought up to our long
list? Is the ratepayer implied sufficiently through all this, or by competition does that need to stand alone?
Economic realities.
We specifically had it down here, but what's the issue as far as how have we identified the ratepayer in our collection of issues up here?
Well, we identified it last week when we were talking about making sure the ratepayer doesn't pay too much.
Okay. You know, okay. And is that? I mean, are we? I mean, you know, that's
ratepayers in economics.
Yeah, those are you know, the six pieces that are now covered over, or seven that we identified last week. I mean, that's still going to be the goal that's out there. These are the issues, and then we'll be looking at the issues and the goal as we patch these together. So the ratepayer gets in there, and you were talking about the economics gets in with the ratepayer identified down here. Anything else?
I think we have to continue to focus that the state's put forward very aggressive renewable energy policy with the renewable energy standard, and we've defined how we want this our state's energy future to look. Now it becomes our responsibility to define who owns that. And once again, I don't think anybody here is going to argue the fact that community-based development is not good for the state. So the focus should be that community-based is good for the state, and we have to remember that and work towards an aggressive community-based goal.
Okay, but and I'm gathering that we've identified that issue, and we need to define ownership and control in that. Okay, any other broad issues that we haven't brought forth? Let me go back to the. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead. I was looking for hands.
Oh, I'll just repeat myself. The two ways I look at it, the two broad issues, is one is we have an 18-year mission to build so much wind. And so that includes everything. And obviously a subset of that would be community-based wind, so building everything affects that. So there's a set of issues that relate to building everything. And that's a convenient way for me to think about it. Then there's a set of issues that relates to building community wind. And there's overlap between those two. But I think this group, because as I mentioned, I think there will be discussions about the larger issue. You know, how can we avoid off-ramps? You know, we don't want to all build in South Dakota. The design says that, you know, there would be no community wind in Minnesota. So that's, to me, is a convenient way to remember that we have an 18-year project that needs to be flexible, that will allow for everything to be built and will allow for community wind to be built. And I think there's a great overlap between those two, but there's a difference. Because if you don't build anything, you're not going to build community wind. If you don't build it timely, you may jeopardize community wind. Or, you know, there's probably a good time to build community wind and not as good a time. And you want to take advantage of those good times and make sure that the overall plan can accommodate that. So I don't think those are specific issues, but it's a way of classifying the two separate sets of issues. Probably both apply to almost everything, but maybe not to all.
Okay, and that perfect segue, because that goes back, I think, to one of your earlier comments, and folks hit on that, gosh, you know, we're going to generate this parking lot list of things that are, quote-unquote, sort of beyond our control, and playing off that, I think, is the same thing. Are there any of these that... that fit more on that broad parking lot that are sort of out of our control, or maybe the flip side on it, as you look at areas to focus on, are there some of these that are strictly seabed and we need to get those in place, those addressed, so the seabed concept can move forward in light of the bigger picture? So it's either you can take them off or strengthen their focus here. Yes?
This falls under competition and economics a little bit, but it is my observation of seabed projects that those who are, there's an extreme amount of competition among seabed projects, and what they're doing, and oftentimes, is they're knocking each other out. In other words, they're competing so heavily on price for a power purchase agreement that their margins, the economics on these are becoming thinner and thinner and thinner, and I'm not sure how to deal with it. I mean, it's just the marketplace, a lot of the landowners, just all they do is they'll say, I just want a project. That's all I want. And they'll take it on good faith that it will work. Yeah. So there's in that competition segment there, you have to understand that there's an extreme amount of competition among seabed folks who are trying to get projects, which it actually is maybe creating a little bit of risk in an overall project.
So we've talked about it for the return, we've talked about it for ease, but it's, you know, it's also, no, that's not a good image. I was going to use wolves fighting over, but it's the aspect of, you know, you've got the various parties sort of fighting over a limited pie. Okay. Anything else? Anything that, again, I'm, one of, I guess, my roles in this is always to winnow down so we can go out there and take a bite and focus on some stuff and come up with a workable collection of solutions or a workable solution. Is there some of these that we can pull off the list and say, gosh, that's really a bigger issue. We need to have it in the back of our mind, but we're not going to be able to solve this huge issue while we're just looking at seabeds. Is there an easy one that lops off, or do we stay in? Do we just simply stay on these eight? Yeah.
Well, I just say that the interconnection is and the transmission system is one of the most pressing issues that we face when we're doing a seabed project, and it's one of the showstoppers and major delays of these projects. But I don't know how much we're going to be able to do about that in this seabed task force. And it's certainly a universal problem to seabed projects and non-seabed projects and coal projects and everything else.
But this could potentially be a wink-wink, nudge-nudge, a larger issue that we can hand off to another task force or something to try and address this, understanding that, you know, we can build it and plugging it in, as she said. You know, you can build these, but if you can't plug them in to the system, they're of no value. Yeah. Sorry, I said that, and a couple of hands came up.
You can't take transmission and interconnection off the table. That's our distinct advantage, that big projects have problems with transmission. You know, so to the extent that we have state authorities over the distribution side in smaller projects, we can probably do a whole lot of seabed if we structure our own authority to act. And of course, it gets to this issue of delivery. You know, if you locate the generator right next to the load, you don't need a transmission to get it there. Okay, so it's got to be on there.
I'm still on trying to winnow this down. Go ahead.
Which is to say, perhaps to reconcile the two positions a little bit, is that there's some transmission that's really helpful for community wind and some that's not. Mm-hmm. What we need to be clear about here is that what we're trying to do is to promote those transmission solutions that help community wind. And not to say other ones wouldn't be there and wouldn't be addressed by other bodies, but this is the place to discuss transmission for community wind and what that would look like. So looking at mm-hmm. both what Ryan said, that's important that it be addressed, but also at the same time that we have to realize that there are limitations to what should be addressed in this body.
Okay. Is that a reasonable statement for folks? Again, it's a player, but we're not set up to address the transmission issue.
But we are set up to do the interconnection part.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I guess I would disagree with that a little bit because you can't do transmission for seabed in a vacuum and not think about the other issues. It's a whole system, and the parts and pieces play and interact off each other. Yes, we can perhaps focus on lower voltage, 115 type transmission, but it's still at the transmission level.
Okay.
The appropriate focus might be lower voltage, shorter time frame types of things.
Okay. What I'm hearing here is it needs to stay on as we look at strategies. It may play in, I don't want to take it off. In all honesty, I'm not hearing enough to say it. Yes, it needs to come off. Anything else to add? There was one that. Sorry, we don't have. Maybe it's in the economic reality piece, but we identified a collection of sort of extra costs. Where are they? Here they are. We talked of the cost on the margin, the pricing, the interconnection, the building, the supply chain. We had another cost piece, and there were two of them that I can't come back to. Are those in the economic piece? Are they in here somewhere? They're sort of additional cost, extra cost. You need those defined?
Perhaps the term that could be used to be something like full cost accounting, because when you're looking at different kinds of economic benefits, so the cost of the ratepayers, it's also the cost of the taxpayers, and it's the cost of local economies. So it would be in there, but it's important to look at it as a full cost perspective and not just from any particular cost item.
Okay. And again, it blends into the economic piece. Okay. Anything else to add with this? Okay. I'm going to take this back and try and match these eight with the A through whatever it is, double A, double B that we've got. It's the resident idiot and the person that probably knows the least about that. So I'll do those matchings, send it out in a draft format. If we need to blend them around a little bit, give me some flexibility in not hitting it right the first time. I'm going to use the staff here to try and help me get them right. But it helps sort of build the process together if I can take these comments and put them in underneath this. So if you'll allow me that level of freedom and flexibility, I'll give it a shot at doing it. And then through probably email, I can throw out the grid like we did this one, and then we can comment on it. I don't want to necessarily take a ton of time at the next meeting to do that. But I want to at least get something that helps fit our documentation piece. Two things. Scheduling the next meeting. This one was sort of set up via, we set it, and people showed up. You guys, I'm not used to doing this. I'm used to having this, you know, half-hour conversation of setting up meetings. But if folks are comfortable in that happening, then we'll try and set something up probably not the weekend or not the week before the Christmas holiday, but probably the week before that. It's about 3 weeks out. Is there too much crunch in that? I'm trying to balance, you know, if we don't do it that weekend, or that week, excuse me, then we're probably doing it the first week of January.
Are you looking at the week of the 10th?
Thank you.
Or the 17th.
Looking at, the week of the 10th is probably the preference. The week of the 17th, the suggestion would be probably the 17th or 18th. I think we could get by with that. As you start getting closer to that weekend, I would guess you're going to see more and more people drop off. So if we shoot for the week of the 10th and or use the 17th or 18th as sort of our next best alternative, that seems to work reasonably for folks.
Yes. With the caveat that as soon as the sooner you can nail a date, the better, because, for example, this was a pretty quick notice.
Okay.
For it, and there were at least Dan wasn't able to be here because he didn't know about it in time.
Okay.
Charlie,
I'll
most likely have a proxy, but okay. We'll be able to be there.
Okay. Yeah, we'll try. We'll shoot for sort of that 10-day window. I know I've got a couple of conflicts inside those dates, but we'll sit down, try and schedule something to see if we can't get as many people here as possible. And trying to do it this week may be difficult, but maybe we can do it early next week and get a date out to you. The second piece and the quote-unquote homework piece is these are your 8 issues that you've identified. The next task is, okay, what do we need to do to address these? None of these, I would say, are slam dunks as far as how do you address them. There's quite a bit of complexity. There's quite a bit of pieces that fit with most of these. So be thinking about between this meeting and next meeting. And again, I'll try and get this out to you early part of next week so you can have some time to think about it. What are some ideas? What are some things that we need to look at and think about to be able to address these? And this gets back to somebody's question earlier about the vision. In looking at the strategies, looking at practical reality sort of strategies, not sort of pie in the sky pieces, but also looking for some creativity in those strategies. I'm not looking for a collection of linear steps. We'll get to that. I'm looking to sort of, let's play with this. And actually, the next meeting is, for lack of a better term, a really fun meeting if you let it be, to sort of play with some of these ideas and bounce them around. The issue with that is you need to keep them sort of boxed in to those things that are sort of realistic. So sort of use that as your challenge. Be creative in thinking of ideas, but also try and be somewhat realistic in putting them together. And also help build them together with other people's ideas. There were a couple hands where I was talking, and I just kept talking over. Any other comments?
I think that means we get to drink also next time.
Can we? Okay. That would be great. Any other comments? From anybody? Yes.
Yeah, I was just wanted to follow up a little bit about what I asked before about getting the consultant. So When is the consultant going to come into play in here, or how is that going to work exactly?
I'm thinking soon, probably before the next meeting.
Okay.
A couple housekeeping things. Everybody, make sure to leave these here with your name tags. Multiple have disappeared after each of the meetings, so the more these that can stay, the less new ones we have to make. So just make sure to leave those. Another reminder on the expense forms, if you intend to turn one of those in, make sure to get those to me. I'll stick around and be the last one out of the room to make sure that those don't go out. And then the one last thing, and I don't know if you wanted to jump in on this too, John, is we got a little bit of direction from the chairs of the LETFs, Senator Solon and Representative Hilty. You'll probably be getting a letter in your email before the next meeting, kind of comments from them on what they hope to see out of this and the direction they hope it goes. The big point, I think, that makes sense, and then the rest of it you can wait to, you know, get it in their words in the email, is, you know, this is what we want to see come out of here, is good consensus beliefs on moving forward on seabed issues, you know, especially because next session, you know, kind of taking the work here, you know, and thinking about these before the next meeting and then relating it to what will actually come out of that in the next session, because if we come out of here and nothing happens in session, it doesn't, you know, we spend a lot of time for nothing. You know, they want to see good consensus issues. Next session is going to be incredibly busy. I think that's even more so in the Senate, where Senator Solon's committee has telecom issues as well as the energy issues. So there's going to be a lot of things happening, and we don't want to see what happened last session where, you know, things kind of bubbled up at the end and a lot of folks didn't get as much done as they wanted to get done on these issues. So this is really the place to come to consensus before session. It's going to be very hard, I think, for in either body to take up many seabed issues if there's not consensus leading into session. So I don't know if you wanted to add any more on the Senate side, but I think that's where they're at, and that's where they're hoping this group can lead. So,
any other comments? Thank you very much for your work today. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Want a business card?
The other one.
Welcome at all.
Maybe we can talk to Andy.
Yeah, I'm gonna get some people too. Just what are the things you're working on that you can share? Is that all in there? You're going to make me work.
I've done 7 of them. This one I did in 6 weeks. I have to contribute in appendices and all. I have to
right.
Start back.
I can do it.
Should do that.
I think it's one of our best.
Maybe you can help me read my
head. I guess what I'm looking at is our
Yep.
I'm George, are you on the run?
Little note that I made. Sure. Andy? Don't take a look at it.
And you're right there.
You do. Can I get a hold of that?
One of the things I mentioned to Eric and Margaret.
Okay, that'd be great.
When we met Margaret specifically, when we had the utility seabed summit,
right.
The governor's office, is to try to see. It actually was.
I like that. I like green.
Initial work you guys have done.
I got one for you to wheel with.
As it may be that one of the only ways to do
like
this might be co-develop them with a utility project or a corporate project or a shared
how would you get that
going in together?
No,
maybe if you
I
Well, 36.